Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or Die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1, 3, and 7-day passes. Watch The Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we're streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Titans in action tonight on Thursday Night Football against the Pittsburgh Steelers, but the Predators also in action tonight against the Seattle Kraken on the road. And joining us now to break it all down is Elliot Friedman of the 32 Thoughts podcast and of Sportsnet. Elliot, always appreciate your time. There's been a lot going on in the hockey world. I want to break that all down with you. But first, I want to focus on here locally. The Predators have been, I think, you know, maybe the poster children for inconsistency. Win a couple, lose a couple, look great in a couple, look not so great in a couple. What do you think is the key to finding consistency? Is it just time?
Well, I think there is that. Like, don't forget, you guys have made some pretty seismic changes on your group, including, you know, the insertion of Ryan O'Reilly, although there's nothing bad at all about that. You know, Luke Shen was supposed to play a big role on your team. He got hurt. You know, Burnett is trying to change the way you guys play a little bit. Some of the younger players are going to get bigger roles. Like, I think the hardest thing in any sport is being good every night. Number one, it's just not possible. And number two, the key is to get there as much as you can. And when you've got young players and you've got people getting used to each other, yes, I do think it takes time. I've seen a lot of like Carolyn about Nashville so far this season. I think you can see they've taken it. There were times last year I really thought they sagged, and I haven't seen too much of that this year. I mean, you have bad games here and there, but
right.
I mean, look, they're the last team to beat the Rangers. They did it on the road. That was a nice win over Toronto last weekend. I see a lot to like. I just obviously think you're not there yet.
Elliot Friedman is with us. You know, and we're looking at the schedule and the standings. You know, every time we talk about the standings, we can always couch it by saying, well, you know, it's early. There's a lot of season left. And that's so true. I mean, we're in the beginning of November. I don't think you can be, you know, scouring the standings after every single game. But in your opinion, when is the time that you need to buckle in? When is it no longer too early to be paying attention or too close attention to the standings?
Well, I think that's a great question because I think the NHL is different than a lot of the other leagues when it comes to this. And the reason is the loser point. Now, the league, people in the league have told me they hate it when I call it that, but that's what I call it, the loser point. And so, Carolyn, I keep a stat, and I go to November 1st. At the end of games on November 1st, which was yesterday, and I've done this for about 15 years now. If you are four or more points out of the playoffs on November 1st, you make the playoffs somewhere between 10 and 15% of the time. So, like, I'm not a panicker by nature. I agree with you. Look, a lot of teams still have, you know, somewhere between 70 and 72 games, sometimes even 73 or 74 games to go. So it's ridiculous to write them off this early. But the history of this league indicates to you that because of the loser point, where if you get into overtime, you get one, it's very difficult to fall far behind and catch up. And if you look at it at American Thanksgiving, your Thanksgiving, and the number's even higher. It's like, basically, if you're in a playoff spot at Thanksgiving, you kind of make it like 87% of the time. There are people who keeps track of this. So, like, you guys are not one of the four teams that's 4 points are out today. That's Pittsburgh, Edmonton, Calgary, and San Jose. So you're not in that, like, red alert zone or anything like that. But this is a league where you cannot afford to fall behind too far because of that loser point.
So, Elliot, what you're saying is we need to revisit this right around Thanksgiving, which is, what, 3 weeks from now? And then
yes,
we can get a better assessment of not just where the, you know, the league is at, but where this Nashville Predator team is at. Such a young team mixed with some really good veterans, a new head coach, new GM. So this is right around that Thanksgiving time is the time that we need to really focus in and say, okay, now we got a better assessment of where this team can be or where this team is.
I think that's fair, Derek. I do think that. And I think the other thing, too, is, like, I think you guys are the only team this year that's made two waiver claims. So that says to me that, you know, Barry Trotz is still tinkering around with what he's got and what he thinks he can have. So that says to me there's still opportunities in the lineup for talented young players to find a spot. So I think when you're claiming people on waivers early, it says to me that there's stuff out there that still interests you and that your roster isn't settled yet. And so that says to me the Predators still think they've got a bit of a way to go.
Now, Elliot, how do – because, you know, when you reach – and we had Ryan McDonough on early this week, and we talked about him, you know, in his game, but then talked about Ryan
yep.
O'Reilly in his 1,000th game that he's played
yep.
in. Certain milestones mean certain things to certain individuals, but what does that mean to the whole NHL, other guys that are looking at a guy like Ryan O'Reilly?
You know, I first of all, I think that's a great question. For 1,000 games, you know, basically, like, you know how tough that game is. Mm-hmm. Think about it. If you were not going to miss a game, that's 12 and a half seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Like, think about how long it takes all these guys to get there. Like, it's a hard thing to do. It says to me that you've been able to stay relatively healthy, and it says to me that you're a really good player. Like, if you play – like, I'm a big believer, honestly, Derek. If you play one game in the NHL, you're a great player. Like, 1% of the people who start playing hockey make the NHL. So if you play one game, you're a great player. But if you play 1,000, you're an incredible player and people really see value in you. You know, the thing about Ryan O'Reilly is he's done it as much with his brains as he has with his physical gifts. I think also he's very committed. Like McDonough and O'Reilly are kind of cut out from the same cloth. Like, they're talented people, but they've made it because of how much they work and how much they take care of themselves and how demanding they are of themselves and others as much as anything else. And, you know, I'll tell you this. I've known some players who got to, like, 990 or 996, and there's nothing to be ashamed of playing 990 or 996 games, but – and, you know, you don't bring up 1,000 around them because it hurts that they just missed.
Now, you had on your 32 Thoughts podcast one of the, and I can't pronounce his last, is it Bierner from the Kraken? Matty Bierner. You had him on your podcast not too long ago talking about, you know, discussing their rise. You know, you got a team that's just coming in the league, an expansion team, and all of a sudden they start to, you know, win some games. What did you learn from him, and how did this rise occur with this team in regards to them starting to win games?
First of all, Derek, I can't believe you listen to that garbage. I'm very impressed.
I gotta listen to some things. You know, when you come on, I gotta have some things that I listen to.
D-Mace doing his homework.
I appreciate that, Derek. You know, I'll say this about them. In their first year, they were really plodding. Like, Derek, honestly, like, it was like a 1970s offense, mm-hmm. right? In football, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. Like that's what they were. And you know, they realized they had to get faster, and they had to get a little more dangerous. And Veneers really helped that. They don't have a lot of players like him. Like, he's one of the youngest players on their team, but he's one of the most skilled players on that team. He's a very creative guy. And I think that's what they did last year. Like, they don't have, like, a dominant line or anything like that. They kind of come at you in waves. But the thing that they – like, in this league, as much as defense is important, it sounds stupid, but you can't win if you can't score. And in their first year, the Kraken couldn't score. Last year at 5-on-5, they were the best scoring team in the league. They come at you in waves. They check you hard, but they really improved their offense. They, like, their gamble they took with Tolvanen, you know, the guy, your guy from Nashville, they only played him 11 or 12 minutes a night, but they found a role for him, an offensive role. And I think that's what they did really well. They went out of their way to try to find scorers who were maybe flawed players in other ways, but they could score. And that was a big part of who they were. But they've got great structure. Everybody is where they're supposed to be, and they usually don't beat themselves.
Elliot Friedman of the 32 Thoughts podcast and of Sportsnet is with us. We called him wheeling and dealing David Poile. I think maybe we can call Barry waiver claiming Barry Trotz with some of the waiver claims that he's put in. But have you heard any, you know, potential trade buzz coming out of Nashville?
I haven't heard a lot. You know, as earlier in the year, I mentioned to you, I heard Garland's name from Vancouver, and then I threw cold water on that. Like, you know, Shen's injury kind of you needed some of your D, and then I heard that I wasn't so convinced that Nashville wanted to do that anyway. I haven't heard a ton about the Predators, but like I said, you know, by claiming the two young players on waivers, Trotz has indicated that he's interested in trying things. I think the other thing, too, is, like, you guys have some flexibility, right? So you guys can do some things to help others. But I know that one of the teams that's most eager to make moves is Vancouver, but they don't want to have to toss in, like, a sweetener, like a draft pick or a prospect to get a deal done. So unless you're willing to make a hockey deal with them, I don't know that there's a fit.
Interesting. Now, looking a little bit big picture, we saw a horrific tragedy last week the Elite Ice Hockey League in the UK with Adam Johnson. I know that the WHL has now required that all players wear protective neck gear. What has the conversation been in the NHL, and can you see maybe some similar mandates and rules be enacted in the NHL?
Well, the first thing, Carolyn, is that we have to I should explain the way it works in the NHL. Like, the league can't just say, okay, everybody put on neck guards. In when it comes to equipment that players wear, the players have a say. Like, when helmets came in, it was put in a way that if you were an existing player, you didn't have to wear them. When visors came in, same thing. If you were an existing player, you didn't have to wear them. But eventually everybody did. So the hockey way has always kind of been make it mandatory at some of the lower levels so that people get used to it. I guess there's three junior leagues in Canada, Ontario, Quebec, and the West. And the West was the only one that didn't have it mandatory. The other two did. Now they do. In the American Hockey League, where you guys have the team in Milwaukee, actually, the players don't have the same power. So last summer, actually, at the NHL's request, the AHL made it mandatory that players had to wear cut-resistant socks and wrist guards. Now, the thing I've noticed about this is, after that injury last weekend, there is definitely a lot of NHL players. Like, if you look now, like, Eric Karlsson's wearing it in Pittsburgh. Tom Wilson today of Washington, one of the league's toughest players, he was wearing it in practice. And we're starting to see some more players skate with them. So I think eventually this will get worked out. But it's going to be a bit of a slower process. I do get a sense, though, that the players, Carolyn, are saying, we should lead on this one because kids do what we do. And I think there are players who do have that feeling. The biggest problem, Carolyn, is that there still isn't a lot of supply of these neck guards. Like, a lot of them, you have to buy them and sew them in. There aren't their own kind of standalone product, although I've been told that's changing. I learned a lot more about this than I ever thought I would. Apparently, there's about 15 kinds of cut-resistant socks, and there's about 10 kinds of cut-resistant wrist guards, but there's only about 3 kinds of cut-resistant neckwear, and people usually order them before the season. They're not so in stock right now. Like, I had an equipment manufacturer say to me the other day, I've never seen anything like this before. We're getting an order online every 20 seconds. So the good news is that people are seeing this, including NHL players, and saying, you know what, we'd better wear the protection. The bad news is I just don't think there's a lot of supply yet, and now they're working on how do we fix that. I think the other thing I'd say, just to anybody out here who plays hockey in the Nashville area, and I know your kids' leagues and your men's leagues and your women's leagues and your fun leagues are thriving, wear it. I know one thing the players have said to me in the last few days is, in the last 5 years, the quality of these neck guards has really improved. They used to be really uncomfortable or really hot. Now, first of all, that's no longer a good enough excuse, but the quality of the stuff has improved. In the NHL right now, if, God forbid, somebody gets cut, the trainers know what to do, the doctors know what to do, they're all right there, and you can't have a game unless there's, you know, at least an ambulance at the arena. Like, if it ever happens in an NHL game, they are so fast, like with Evander Kane last year, those trainers and doctors and EMTs, they know exactly what to do. They're so good, it's like clockwork. If this happens to you at, say, some rink in Nashville where you play, chances are there's not going to be that infrastructure there to help you out. So if you're like a recreational hockey player or a youth hockey player or whatever in the Nashville area, put this stuff on because, you know, God forbid you get cut, there's not going to be the infrastructure there to help you.
So you can see more guys wearing this next season or toward the latter part of the season than you see now, basically because of the demand and there's not enough supply at this point.
Yes, I think you'll like TJ Oshie of Washington owns a company that makes this stuff, and he said that he's sold out. Like he's on back order now. So the moment these things become available, I think you're going to see more and more players wearing them. And eventually, I think there will be a move to mandate them at some point.
Devastating that something so tragic had to happen in order to, you know, to kind of enact this kind of change, but also admirable of NHL players to know the impact that they have in every single level of the game. But in another scenario, much less tragic, another scenario of learning by example is Shane Pinto. Of course, we learned that he'll be suspended for 41 games. And when you were with us last week, you mentioned that it was a third party that was using his account, and that's what he got busted for. What's the latest on that? And we're hearing that there are some NHL players coming forward asking questions of, is what I'm doing okay? Am I in the right? Am I in the wrong? What's kind of been the latest with the Shane Pinto situation and gambling in the NHL as a whole?
Well, I think that one of the things that I think has definitely happened, Carolyn, is that there were a lot of players either phoning their agents or asking their teams, like the general manager or the Players Association, what exactly do I have to know here? Like, I had a couple call me, like, say, what do you know? Like, just tell me what you know, because, like, you know, believe it or not, I'm sure you guys believe it, but I'm sure people might be surprised. There's a lot of players across all sports who legally gamble on things. They all have a lot of them have betting accounts. A lot of them play fantasy football or Masters pools like we all do. And they were all trying to figure out what exactly occurred. Like, I know the Players Association set up some Zoom calls for players to get on this week to say, okay, you need to talk about this. And, you know, the one thing I think, Carolyn, is it was more than one thing. I believe that now. It was more than one thing. But, you know, one of the things they kind of talked about was they told players, and this doesn't necessarily mean that Pinto was guilty of these things, but these were the kinds of things that they told players about. You know, don't share your betting account. Like, if you have it, it's only for you. Don't give it to anyone else. Don't bet on hockey in any way, whether it's a game or even a prop bet. If a friend calls you and says, hey, you know, just use an example. Ryan McDonough, you're plus 350 to score a goal tonight. What do you think? Don't laugh or joke with them. Like, call them, tell them never to do that again. And if they can't handle that, like, just cut them out of your life. Don't share any insider injury information. And don't bet illegally, like using a bookmaker or anything like that. Like it seems like kind of common sense, but maybe sometimes people need a refresher. Like, the fun stuff that we all do, like fantasy football and legal wagering, there was no problem with any of that. I think the issue was that it got into some gray areas, and his friends took advantage of him a bit, and that's where the trouble was.
Yeah, and that's a shame. And I think that we've seen it here, at least in Tennessee, when sports gambling became legal, what, like 3 years ago now?
Yeah.
It's become such a, so ingrained into just everyday sports life.
It's normal now.
It's so normal, whereas even just 5 years ago, it was taboo. You couldn't even mention a spread or placing a bet. I mean, now it's plastered all over networks across the country. It's crazy how things have changed so drastically. And now that we're seeing it kind of come to fruition in every league in America. But Elliot Friedman.
Yeah, that's totally true. The only people who could mention it were Brent Musburger and Al Michaels, and they had to do it in code, so we all understood.
Yeah, exactly. They were the only ones that were excused. But Elliot Friedman of the 32 Thoughts podcast and the Sportsnet. Elliot, always appreciate your insight. Thank you for stopping by. We'll chat with you next week.
All right, guys. Have yourselves a great weekend. Enjoy.
Yep, you do decide.
Are you watching the Titans tonight, Elliot?
Of course. I work in Toronto, Boston, but I'll have an eye. I love Derrick Henry. Like, when I was a kid, I loved Earl Campbell. I like big, strong running backs, so I'm a big Derrick Henry guy.
All right. And I think he's a big fan of you, too.
I'd be like, who's that? That's nice of you to say.
All right. Thanks, Elliot. Have a good rest of your week.
Take care, guys.
Yep.
Elliot Friedman, he is the very best. All right, coming up next, we mentioned it, Titans and Steelers tonight on Thursday Night Football. We'll give our official predictions and final thoughts on this game coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, we're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays. Hey, tomorrow, Robbie and Rexrode and the Chase and Big Joe shows will be live for the grand opening of a new Dunkin' location at 14835 Lebanon Road in Old Hickory. 1025 The Game will be on site from 6 to 11 a.m. and have your chance to win tickets to an upcoming Nashville concert. Plus, there will be a ton of giveaways. Titans on Thursday Night Football tonight. We get to see Will Levis, Game 2. And I know that the expectations have absolutely skyrocketed. When last week the conversation was, everybody be nice, okay? You know, we're gonna grade on a curve here. We're gonna temper our expectations. Rookie quarterback making his NFL debut. It might not look pretty, but let's just hope we can see some good things for the future. Yeah, okay. Goes out there and throws four freaking touchdowns. It's not fair to expect Will Levis to do that tonight. It's not fair to expect Will Levis to do that every single week, but nor is Will Levis's entire evaluation going to be solely be based on tonight. I expect him to struggle. Demis, you've been saying all week, you expect him to throw a pick.
Yeah, I mean, you don't expect him to go out there and just because you know how, you know, we've watched this league long enough and you know, hey, you may go on a run for three or four games and everything looks great, and then all of a sudden, boom, you know, the bottom falls out. Does that mean that your team is bad or you're a bad player? No, it just means that, hey, you had a bad game. And let's see how you then, you know, come back after having a bad game. So, you know, for Levis, it's, you know, I expect him. Would I love for him to go out and throw four touchdowns again? Absolutely. Would the organization love that? Of course they would. But they know,
win the game.
Yeah, you know, they know that. Listen, things are not going to be the way they were last week. We're playing a different opponent, different players, different scheme. You know, so things are going to, now they have some tape on us, on you, Will. So now we need to, you know, some things will stay the same in regards to play calling, but we need to kind of mix it up a little bit, disguise some things, because that's what they're going to do to you as a quarterback. So, listen, he's going to have his moments, but then he's going to have his moments where he looks like a rookie quarterback. So, I don't think the Titans' plan for him moving forward will change regardless. You know, if he goes out there and plays another game like he did last week, or if he goes out there and sort of comes back to earth, I think their plan is still to, you know, go forward with him and allow him to grow within his offense and allow the people around him to grow with him. So, you know, I want to see a good game, but, you know, more than likely we're going to get a game where he struggles at times. Because last week, it didn't seem like he struggled at all. Mm-hmm. You know, everything it seemed like he did worked. It
seemed like everything, and obviously easier for me to say than for mm-hmm. him to do, but it seemed like things just came very effortlessly.
Yeah, and that's because of, you know, he probably saw things a little bit clearer. He had a couple of weeks to game plan. And from what I'm gathering, he was locked in. He was locked in from the moment, you know, Ryan knew he couldn't go during that bye week. He was locked in, focused on the Atlanta Falcons. Now how do you come back on a short week and play against the Pittsburgh Steelers, who are going to give you different looks from a defensive standpoint, not just up front. They're going to give you different looks on the back end with those corners and safeties.
I've made a list of the people, factors, position groups mm-hmm. that I think are the most important for Will Levis to just have, you know, a solid game. Mm-hmm. For Will Levis to be protected and for the Titans to have an opportunity to go out there and win the football game. I mean, that's what Mike Vrabel told us. They want to win games. Mm-hmm. D-Hop, Derrick Henry, offensive line, Tim Kelly. Mm-hmm. Who's the most important factor for Will Levis tonight?
I mean,
they're all important.
They're all important. The offensive line is very important. I think that's number one. You got to be able to protect in order to run your offense. You got to be able to run block in order to, you know, open some things up in the pass game. So let's just set that aside, because the offensive line is the most important part of what they need to do. If they block well, then it's more than likely Will have an okay game. I'm not going to say he's going to have a great game, but at least you're giving him a chance if you're blocking. If not, then you know what it's going to be more than likely. He may struggle. But to me, it all goes back to Tim Kelly. Tim Kelly, short week. How did you prepare this young man in such a short week? Did you, because this is what happens in this league. In a short week, you're preparing for your opponent, Atlanta, but you also are preparing for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, it's not as in-depth as you are with Atlanta, but because you got a bye week, you know you can prepare for both. So I'm sure there were times and periods in the off week where, you know, probably, you know, start to practice period three. Pittsburgh. This is Pittsburgh's defense. I'm telling you, this is what they were saying. We're going against Pittsburgh's defense. This is Pittsburgh's defense for period number three. Because they had a bye week. They weren't playing nobody. Yeah, they're planning for Atlanta, but they're still preparing themselves for such a short week. Whether it was Ryan Tannehill or now Will Levis, they had to get some type of game plan in for Pittsburgh because they would be coming off such a short week. So period three of the bye week, this is Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh's defense. Period eight, all Pittsburgh defense, red zone defense. So they did some things in that bye week that prepared Will Levis for Pittsburgh. He had to put that in the back of his mind because he knew they were playing Atlanta. Now you pick back up in such a short week. So it's up to Tim Kelly to put together a game plan, a simple but clean game plan for this young man so he can go out there and be the best version of himself that he can possibly be. The one thing you don't want to do with a young quarterback, you can do it with Ryan Tannehill. You can just throw, hey, because you know it.
Go out there and do your thing.
Yeah, you've seen Pittsburgh 100 times.
Right.
You still got a game plan. But for a young quarterback, things need to be clean for him. There need not to be all of this other trickery and all this. No, I need a clean game plan. What do you like, Will? What don't you like? We're taking all that stuff out. We're putting in things that you like, that you feel comfortable with in such a short week. So to me, this game is about Tim Kelly and how he calls this game for Will Levis.
And I think that's probably tough for an offensive coordinator, you know, for a rookie quarterback that you are still kind of learning.
Yeah.
But I also look at Derrick Henry and DeAndre Hopkins. Mm-hmm. I think that those two are going to be, you know, his absolute best friends in every single game moving forward throughout the rest of the season. Kind of his bailout guys, the support guys that he knows that he can trust. Mm-hmm.
But that all boils down to how Tim Kelly calls the game.
Yeah, true, yeah. Fair.
So that's why I put Tim Kelly, you know, on the top. But then, like you said, Derrick Henry and D-Hop, they need to be the two guys that he can depend on. But Tim Kelly needs to be the guy that sets it all up and make it all flow together, the calls all flow together.
And the offensive line, of course, the offensive line is important, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
You don't have Chris Hubbard out there. Andre Dillard's going to be out there going up against this Pittsburgh defensive front. It's important, and you want to protect the quarterback, absolutely. But you know, it is what it is, unfortunately, and it's just not very good.
No, it's not.
Let's get into some of your thoughts. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. One texter texts in says, if Levis can play decent against this defense, win or lose, the Titans can say that they have a quarterback. Pittsburgh, with their aggression and with what seems to be one of the most violent defenses in the game, maybe Levis can escape unscathed. Just facts. I would applaud the Titans fan base for saying, hey, win or lose, we just want to see what we got in the young guy. But I don't think it's fair to say, and I want your thoughts on this, D-Maze. I don't think it's fair to say that if he has a decent game tonight, then the Titans can say they have a quarterback. You can't evaluate a guy off of two games. You can't say he's great or awful. You're the guy of the future based off of two games. I think we all think he can be the guy of the future. He should be the guy of the future. I don't think they traded up in the second round for him to not be the future. But I'm not ready to say anything definitive about Will Levis just based off of two games.
No, you know, you can't say whether, you know, he's going to be the next Peyton Manning or is he going to be Achilles Smith, Ryan Leaf, you know, just
Marcus Mariota.
Just name some of these quarterbacks that careers never got going, regardless if they had a bad game and, you know, or a good game. Their careers just never got going. So you can't tell that by one or two games. Again, I think it's a situation where we just want to see you get better. Do we want to win the game? Absolutely. But I think for this young quarterback, the most important thing is how do I call games for him? And then how does he react to certain adversity that's going to come? If you get back up, shake it off, brush it off, and get back underneath center and be ready to go, then okay, I think we got some. But if you start to get frazzled a little bit, then okay, maybe I need to dial some things back. Maybe I just need to rely solely on, you know, Derrick Henry running the football and allow that to open up things. But yeah, you can't, whether, you know, Will goes out there and play a great game or he goes out there and come back down to earth, you can't say he's our franchise or he's not based upon two games. It's going to take the remainder of these games. That's why I said once Ryan Tannehill got hurt in that Baltimore game, he will never see the light of day underneath center again, Ryan Tannehill. And it's not because I don't think Ryan Tannehill can play. I think Ryan Tannehill could go some other team and be a starter. But once that young man stepped underneath center, this is your future.
Yeah.
Once he stepped underneath center, it was his. You don't go back. You got to stay there. Because Ryan wasn't playing well anyway. And the team wasn't, you know, doing anything anyway. So put that young guy in. And, hey, this is yours. This is your team moving forward.
you're not a bust or a future Super Bowl MVP based off of one game.
No, but I do hope we have a Brock Purdy star.
I would love that. That'd be great.
Absolutely.
I would love if we could see if he's Tom Brady or not. And I would like if he was Tom Brady. That'd be fantastic. Dylan texts in with a question for you, D-May. Says, what did you think of Will Levis's command of the huddle on Sunday and how he seemed to audible plays?
I thought it was fantastic. That's one of the things that I was truly impressed by. You know, because we knew he had the big arm. I didn't need to see him throw the ball deep to know he had a big arm. I saw enough of it in college, saw it a little bit in the preseason, and saw it in practices. The kid has a big arm, so I wasn't impressed. You did something that I knew you can do, so why am I impressed with it? You know?
That's he like, said he has a cannon.
Exactly. That's like my
self-proclaimed
son.
Cannon.
That's like my son. It's like, yeah, I know you are a very smart and intelligent kid. So I'm not impressed with the A. You know, I knew you had it in you.
You hear that, DJ?
Yeah, I'm not impressed. But I love it. I love it. Yeah. But it's not like, whoa, you got an A. Oh, my goodness. It's the same with Will Levis.
That's the expectation.
I saw you throw. That's the expectation. You got a big arm. This is what scouts, you know, salivated about in regards to you. The big arm make every throw. But I was most impressed by his ability to command the huddle. His ability to seem as if nothing was bothering him. He had this calmness that I think you need to have as a quarterback. Again, he didn't get too high, didn't get too low. He just played at an even keel. That even keel was a damn good game, but he just played at that level that I think all quarterbacks need to play at.
And it was the confidence, mm-hmm. calmness, and maturity. Mm-hmm. That win or lose the Falcons game, great that they won. Mm-hmm. Of course, obviously, we've said that all week, that 3-4 versus 2-5 feels like two very, very different positions to be in this current AFC South. But it was how Will Levis carried mm-hmm. himself that I thought was really impressive.
So tell me, would you have thought any different of him if Atlanta goes down and they score? Van Jefferson catches the ball and uh-huh. they put themselves in a position to win that game. Do you feel any different about Will Levis?
No, I don't. I think win or lose. Yeah. Maybe the fan base feels a little bit mm-hmm. different. Or maybe the fan base feels, hey, with a performance like that and your defense still can't get a stop, like, mm-hmm. my goodness. I wouldn't have thought any different of him. Mm-hmm. Win or lose, just simply what Will Levis did, how he did it, and with the level of confidence that he did it with. That was so impressive to me, regardless of the score.
Now, what I do want to see from him is 2-minute. I do want to see a 2-minute drill in him.
He struggled a little bit in 2 minutes.
So that's what I want to see from him. Because the Titans will get in a situation where I think they're going to have to use 2 minutes in some point of the game, or they're going to go hurry up. I want to see how does he handle that as a quarterback.
We will give our official predictions coming up next, plus best bets of the weekend with Ali Milnicki of Zen Sports. Coming up next, Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Titans on Thursday Night Football tonight. And joining us now for the best bets of the night is our friend Ali Milnicki of Zen Sports. Ali, appreciate you for joining us. And we speak with you every week about Thursday Night Football. But now it is Thursday Night Football with our home team, Tennessee Titans, on the road with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Pittsburgh Steelers, 2.5-point home favorites. Do you think Will Levis can have a repeat performance of last week? Can the Titans get it done?
I don't know about this one. The Steelers have one of the most underrated defensive units. That's a tough front seven led by T.J. Watt. I know Levis looked great last week against Atlanta, but Atlanta's defense is a totally different horse to Pittsburgh. Playing in Heinz Field for a rookie in front of a big crowd on a prime time, it's going to be a lot of pressure. I think if I have a lean, it's going to be the under on this one. We know the Steelers can't score that well as well. We don't know what's going on with their quarterback situation. Is it Kenny Pickett? Is it Mitch Trubisky? I don't know either way, but I think my strong lean would be the under tonight.
over under 36.5, low, but I would probably agree with you. Two offenses that have been struggling. Will Levis still want to see more from him, as great as his debut was? But Najee Harris and Derrick Henry, both with pretty good odds for anytime touchdown scorers tonight. Derrick Henry plus 145, Najee Harris plus 195. In the battle of the running backs, who would you give the edge to get into the end zone tonight?
I'm going to go with Derrick Henry. I think also take some pressure off Will Levis. Give Derrick Henry the ball. Let him create some space. Get a lot of second and shorts, third and shorts when you get to the goal line. Just hope for no interceptions, no mistakes. Feed Henry the ball, and he'll get in the goal.
Now, Allie, I am so upset with the NFL for this one. The Dolphins and the Chiefs, they sent it over to Germany. I understand why they're doing it, but this is a primetime game, and we're going to be able to we got to watch it at 8:30 in the morning. But over under here, 51 points. Are you taking an over, or are you a little bit concerned about the Chiefs passing offense because of all the drops?
Well, you guys get to sleep in. I'm in Los Angeles, so I got to be up at 6:30
to watch. Oh, my goodness.
Early morning.
I have a toddler, so she'll have me up anyway. But, yeah, this is one you want to go with the shootout with the 51. But I don't know. Some of these overseas games, it's tough for the players to get adapted to the time difference. These are two high-octane offenses, especially Miami's. But the thing with the Chiefs is it's a very underrated defensive unit. This game reminds me of when the Bills played Miami after Miami put up 70 on Denver and the Bills just shut them down. I like the Chiefs to both cover on this one, and I'd actually lean under.
Now, another game that everyone's going to be watching, the Cowboys and the Eagles. Are you taking the points with the Eagles or taking the points with the Cowboys? I think Cowboys are +3. Eagles are -3 in this one. Are you taking the points in the Cowboys?
Well, as a Giants fan, I wish they would both find a way to lose this game. But if I had to take one, this is a team that these are two teams that are so evenly matched. I don't think Philadelphia is the same team despite their record as they were last year. You've seen a lot of close games with them, especially the two against Washington. This one, I think the Cowboys play their best game. We saw them just blow out the Rams last week. I think they come prepared. This is a fierce rivalry. Whoever wins it, whether it's the Cowboys or the Eagles, I think it's going to come down to a field goal at the end. I think it's going to be a shootout through the air. I would lean both the over on this one, and I'd like the Cowboys to cover that 3 points.
Last one for you, Allie. Buffalo Bills and Cincinnati Bengals on Sunday Night Football this weekend. That is maybe a new rivalry, a newer rivalry that I have absolutely loved every single year. Who do you like that one in the AFC showdown?
I think it's hard to pick against the Bengals right now. Everyone kind of wrote them off early in the season when they had that struggle start. But look at them the last few games. They just completely dismantled the 49ers last week. Brock Purdy looked like a backup quarterback, especially toward the end of the game. I think it's hard to go against the Bengals right now. The Bills, they just tend to be inconsistent. Their defense has really struggled after losing Milano and Tre'Davious White for the year. I think Joe Burrow is going to put up big numbers. T. Higgins came back to life last week, so this one, I think it's going to end up like it did in the playoffs last year. Bengals win and cover.
Allie Milnicki of Zen Sports. Allie, we always appreciate your time every single week. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks, guys.
All right, appreciate it. All right, D-Mace, let's get into our predictions. What do you expect to see from the Titans tonight?
I expect to see the defense, that defensive front, stop the Pittsburgh Steelers from running the football. Can the back end take away some of the big plays that Pittsburgh is capable of making with those skilled guys? I'm looking for the Titans to run the football first, run it second, run it third, try to take as much as they can off the young man's plate, meaning Will Levis. I think this is a game that you play in a phone booth. And when you get your opportunities to throw it down the field, play action, that's when you do it. But you have to be protection conscious in this game, which may put you in a position where you're running the football more this game. Again, playing in a phone booth. This is how Pittsburgh and the Titans play. This is how the Titans in Baltimore play, inside of a phone booth. So if you make it that type of game, lean on Derrick Henry heavy, protection conscious, that's what I'm looking for. From Tim Kelly and his Titans offense. And then obviously Shane Bowen in the defense, what I said.
I don't want to see another repeat of the Cleveland Browns game where Myles Garrett just took over the game. You didn't run the ball. Ryan Tannehill was, you know, on his butt the entire game. I don't want to see that. I want to see some protection from T.J. Watt, which, of course, is easier said than done. Mm-hmm. He's going to be able to get to Will Levis. That is going to happen. But how can you stay consistent and stay committed to the run game and at least try to not let T.J. Watt take over the game? I think it's tough for me to pick the Titans tonight. Mm-hmm. It really is. I was so impressed with Will Levis and what I saw in week one. But I'm also going to be realistic here and understand that there's going to be games, there's going to be times, plays, games as a whole, where Will Levis struggles. We might see him struggle tonight. Short week, on the road, tough defense, tough place to play. I'm taking the Pittsburgh Steelers to win this one 20-13.
Ooh, man. I think the Titans, I think they're going to play well enough to win, but I just think it's going to be what they're doing, what they are potentially going to do from a defensive standpoint, meaning Pittsburgh, the confusion, you know, bringing pressure, not having Hubbard out there, you know, really testing that offensive line. I just think it's going to be too much. I think the young man is going to have his ups and downs, meaning Will Levis. I think we're going to come out of this game still feeling good about him, but I don't think they're going to get the win. I think the Titans lose this game. I think Pittsburgh wins 20-17.
So we both think it's a fairly low-scoring game. I do think if they can stay committed to running the ball with Derek, even when it's not pretty, because it's not going to be pretty. Like, it's not going to be Derek Henry for double-digit pickups per carry. If Derek Henry can run for 100 yards, I think the Titans have a chance of winning this game.
Yeah, if Derek Henry gets over 100 yards, I predict they win the game. If he gets, say, if he like ends up like last week, 25 to 30 carries, 115, 20 yards, maybe a touchdown. He would have to get a touchdown, I think.
Yeah.
I think the Titans win this game. Why? Because they control the clock. They take the pressure off the young quarterback and put it on the veteran running back in that offensive line. That's why I said they got to be conscious, protection conscious, and lean heavy. This is a game where you may not see a lot of catches on the outside.
Right.
This may be played between the tackle, from tackle to tackle. I think if they do that, Derek gets over 25, 30 carries, that 115, 20 yards, a touchdown, they have a chance to win this game, a very good chance.
I'm fine with Derek getting the ball 30 times.
Yeah.
I'm totally
short
fine
week,
with that.
Short week, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that we have seen when Derek Henry gets the ball 20-plus times, you win. Got the ball 22 times last week for over 100 yards. You won the football game. Derek Henry is still Derek Henry. Derek Henry still commands respect from a defense that gives you an overwhelming advantage.
But this is an opportunity, too, for Tim Kelly to use both Derrick Henry and Tajay Spears in different ways. Like, you got to be conscious of using both of them, using Spears at a certain time, but relying heavy on Derrick Henry for the tough yards, but then bringing Spears in for the change of pace, getting outside the tackles, getting in between that speed will hurt that front line of the that defensive front of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Taking the Steelers to win this one. Prove me wrong.
Please do.
Prove me wrong. Titans in prime time tonight. Predators also in action in Seattle tonight as well. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. with a full Titans breakdown. Stillman and Company is up next.
Be love and love on your people. Peace.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or Die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1-3 and 7-day passes. Watch The Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.